Welcome to the AI Business Podcast, where we feature conversations with interesting guests at the intersection of artificial intelligence and business.
Hi, my name is Deborah Yao, and I'm the editor of AI Business. And I want to introduce to you Stephanie Covert, the Executive Vice President of Software at FICO. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you, Deborah. Thanks for having me today.
Well, tell me a little bit about FICO and what you do there.
You know, at the highest level, FICO is a global analytics software company, and we were founded, you know, back in 1956. So we've been doing this for a little bit of time now. And we're most known for introducing kind of the first commercial credit scoring system. And there's really always been two major business lines at FICO. You know, the first is our FICO scores business, and most people know our FICO scores business because of the FICO credit score in the U.S. And the second business is our software business. And the FICO software business is really focused on delivering analytic-powered software that helps our customers to manage decisions across the entire credit risk lifecycle. An example of this might be, you know, in like the card originations process. When, you know, a consumer goes to a bank and they apply for a credit card, what the FICO platform does is it really helps the bank to assess the credit risk of approving or denying the application of that consumer. For me personally here at FICO, I have the great opportunity of leading all aspects of the software business, and that's everything from sales all the way to product development.
Yeah, I guess you're right that a lot of people know FICO for the credit scoring system, but maybe not so much about what you do in software. That's really interesting. So Stephanie, I understand that you're heading a transformational shift at FICO to an AI platform, and the whole goal is to deliver hyper-personalized services. Can you, first of all, tell me more about what motivated the company to do this and also what you're doing exactly?
Yeah, we are going through quite the transition right now. But Deborah, maybe I can step back and talk a little bit about, you know, why we're making this shift from what we were previously doing, which was building point solutions, to building an AI-enabled platform. You know, what we've saw over the last many years is there's been a big shift in customer expectations. And, you know, customers are really wanting their organizations to work with them and to know how to deliver value-added and really personalized experiences. You know, and what we've seen over the last number of years is that there are really a lot of silos that existed in banks. And these silos were really driving a disconnected customer experience. They didn't really have a true 360-degree view of the customers to be able to deliver those great experiences. And then coming out of the pandemic, this issue was just really amplified. And what happened was there was a majority during the pandemic, everything went to the digital space. All the interactions with customers for banks moved from being primarily in the branch to 100% online. And so this really forced the banks to go through, you know, digital transformation. And now that they're dealing with their customers in this new digital world, it became even more important for them to be able to deliver a great customer experience digitally and to make sure that that experience was really personalized so they could still have that personal connection or feeling with their customers. And so what we saw was that rather than just kind of selling point solutions that were just solving a singular customer need, that what these organizations really needed was a holistic way to view their customers. You know, they needed to be able to look across all of the data that they had about these customers. They needed to be able to use AI to harness the insights out of that data and then use those insights that they garnered to really optimize every interaction with their customer. And because each touch point is important along the journey, no matter what it is, they needed to be able to deliver the right experience every time in order to continue to build that loyalty. So what we've been doing as part of our platform transformation is kind of taking the decades worth of innovation that we had in our standalone applications and unifying those capabilities into kind of a single SaaS platform. And so now our customers are able to really use these platform capabilities to build new services and new solutions very quickly to address any needs they have with their customers. And each use case that they build they're able to enhance the next use case because all of the use cases share decision assets, they share AI, and they share data. And so each use case that they build on the FICO platform to address the customer lifecycle makes the ones before it even better and makes the customer experience even stronger. You know, and really when I think about our goals in this transformation, it's really to help our customers, you know, build stronger and more profitable relationships with their customers, but also enable them to really optimize those customer interactions so they're delivering the right experience for their customers and they're building that customer loyalty.
So if we can dig deeper a little bit on this AI platform, can you tell me how you were able to build that and what did you use? Did you use open source? Did you use, existing tools in the cloud? Did you partner with someone? And how long it took for you to deploy?
Sure. So we do a kind of a combination of the above. Our cloud platform is built on the infrastructure of Amazon Web Services today. But the capabilities are a combination of leveraging some capabilities from open source, but a majority of the capabilities that we deliver are capabilities that have been built by the FICO team. They're very unique and they're very differentiated. In fact, we have a lot of patents around the capabilities that we built. So it's really a combination of open source, of FICO specific IP, and then leveraging a public cloud infrastructure to deliver that to our customers.
So a lot of companies maybe struggle with, you know, maybe striking that balance between what's built in-house, what you do with the hyperscalers, et cetera, what kind of language models to use. How did you strike that balance? How did you put together that team? And did you have to bulk up your data science team to do so?
So the way that we look at addressing, do we use open source to accelerate time to market or build the IP ourselves within FICO is, we look at it in two ways. The platform consists of what we call market-leading capabilities. These are capabilities that are around decisioning, around analytics, around optimization, around communication. Those are the capabilities that we feel really differentiate us in the market, that we have a secret sauce for the way that we do that, and that the combination of all those together is really unique and differentiated in the market. And then we look at what we call enabling capabilities on the platform. Those are the capabilities that you would expect in any platform, whether it's things like observability or a repository. We look at those as those are the table stakes of a platform. And so when we look to leverage open source, we do it in the areas of our enabling capabilities because they're not as differentiated. You're expected to have them. You're expected to have identity and access management on the platform, but we don't necessarily have to invest a lot of R&D to do that. We can leverage some open source and accelerate the time there and use our R&D resources to really develop our market-leading capabilities. And in terms of, did we have to bring on more data scientists to do what we're doing today? You know, we've always have a heritage of data scientists at FICO, and we've always had large teams of data scientists over the last many decades. And so we were able to leverage our existing resources that we have today in order to accelerate the AI portions of the platform.
Is it right to assume that this AI platform is being offered to your banks or clients of FICO to use?
Yes, that is correct. So our platform is available today, and it's used by over 100 of the top tier one banks in the world today.
So can you tell me what functionality is the most popular among banks when they go on your AI platform? Is it to make their chatbots smarter? Is that something that's the most popular, or what do you see?
No, some of the most popular uses on our platform are really to drive analytic enhanced decisioning. So our customers come to us to solve a number of different problems, whether it might be an originations problem. They might want to make better, smarter, and faster decisions on the originations front. They might want to be tackling better customer management, and they want to be able to use all the data that they have about a customer and to be able to make smarter decisions, whether that's how to market to them, when to offer them maybe a credit line increase, or maybe how to treat them if they fall into some hard times and go into the space around maybe pre-delinquency or collections. So there's a number of use cases that our customers use, hundreds actually, on the platform, but they're really rooted in bringing in data into the platform, applying analytics to that data and finding the value in that data and using those insights to drive optimized decisions, and then using the feedback loop and the learning mechanisms in the FICO platform to make each and every next iteration smarter. So it's really focused on analytic powered decisioning.
Do you use generative AI on your platform?
Today, we do not use generative AI today on our platform from a FICO perspective, but we really have the ability to enable our customers to use generative AI. But what we do is make sure that we can help them use that generative AI in a auditable and explainable way. And so it's really about them being able to take a model that they might have built in-house and execute that as part of maybe a marketing strategy or another strategy within their portfolio. But we make sure that we can understand how those decisions are being made, and they can always point to and report back on the audit trail of what was being done around that decision.
Is there a reason why you're not offering that? Is it coming in the future? Or are you concerned about the risks of generative AI, being that financial services is a heavily regulated industry?
Yeah, you know, I think there's so many great uses of AI, and we do think there's enormous value for generative AI inside of financial services. But as you said, it is a highly regulated environment. And so what we want to do is make sure that any AI that's used, especially, you know, in the financial services sector, is responsible. So our focus right now is really on the R&D around how do we make the generative AI responsible, auditable, and ensure that it is used in an ethical way when it's used on the FICO platform. So that's where we put our energy in terms of looking at how we would bring it to our platform.
So I'm just curious, you know, since you deal with clients, banking clients, is there an appetite for generative AI currently, or everyone's kind of a little bit cautious about it, or they're very gung-ho about it? What's the sense there?
I think you get the entire spectrum on that. I think some people are really excited about figuring out how they can use some use cases right now, and some are a little bit more cautious. I think some examples of where our customers are really interested in exploring generative AI is really around how can they improve their consumer interactions. So that might be in the areas of customer service where, you know, they want to enable smarter chatbots to help customers self-serve. Or, you know, in the area of communicating with customers, they want to better understand, can I understand when I need to reach out and talk to a customer, can I better understand not only their preference of communication channel, do they want me to give them a call, send them an email, or send them a text, but when is actually the best time to reach out to them that they might be able to interact with that communication and resolve an open issue or respond to an offer that I'm sending them. So they're really looking in the areas today around that customer experience and customer support perspective when we talk to our customers. But I think everybody is in the banking industry does have a little bit of caution because they do want to make sure that they're using it in a responsible way. But I know that people are excited to start to find really valuable uses in the market.
Let's change the focus to internally at FICO. How are you leveraging AI in the company?
So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we've been using AI in financial services probably longer than just about anyone. And so from a FICO perspective, you know, specifically, we embed AI directly into our solutions. And so customer can leverage FICO-built models and AI right in the FICO platform. But we've also built a number of AI development and execution tools as part of our FICO platform. Because we're focused on also ensuring that our customers are able to operationalize their AI investments and be able to bring into production their AI and ensure that they're getting value from their own investments. And so we're very happy for customers to leverage our models and our AI in their decision-making processes, but we're also happy for them to bring their own. So the platform really enables both pieces of that. And I would also say that we spend a fair amount of time on research and development when it comes to AI as well. You know, today we hold around like 218 patents, all pertaining to the area of AI. And this spans areas like anything from interpretable machine learning to ethical and auditable AI. And so we're using AI in every solution that we build, but we're also enabling our customers to bring their own as well.
What are some of the biggest challenges you see your banking clients encounter when they're trying to deploy AI in their own companies? And what are some of the solutions that you've seen as well?
Most of our customers are really challenged with being able to take AI from the development stage to being able to use it into production. You know, and I think if you look at the statistics, I believe Gartner says about, you know, 90% of AI projects fail to deliver the value that they were intended to deliver because of that difficulty in the actual operationalization of it. So we see our customers challenged with that every day, challenged with getting the right data in, and then challenged with then operationalizing the analytic itself. So what we really help our customers do is kind of, you know, cut through the problem of first getting the data. You know, with the FICO platform, they can bring in data from anywhere, third party data, first party data, streaming, at rest, structured, unstructured, it doesn't matter. They can bring that all into the FICO platform. And then with our execution capability, they can use their AI models and execute them in production. And then we can help them monitor, explain, and report on what is going on with those analytics so that they can ensure that they're using these analytics in a ethical way.
So how do you solve that problem of getting from the proof of concept to production?
So it all comes with having the right technology to be able to have scale and low latency. So I think a lot of the challenges our customers face is they have great AI that they've built and great models that they've built, but those models need to be executed on a technology that's able to scale and have a fast TPS, right? They need to be able to make quick decisions. They need that model to operate with low latency because the decisions that are made in financial services need to be made in a split second. And so with our technology, we're able to help them bring those models into their environment, able to execute those at high scale and low latency, and to be able to make the decisions in the timeframe that they need to make them in order to deliver their customer experiences.
Okay. So talking about data, you know, for several years now, fintech startups have been trying to crack the financial services market, and then they use some very interesting metrics to assess the credit worthiness of consumers, including, you know, social media data and maybe some of their background education to see whether or not a borrower is credit worthy. How does FICO think about that?
You know, first I would say that I think a lot of fintechs talk about using social media data, but I think, you know, the fact remains that the most predictive data for credit performance is really past credit performance. And, you know, when I think about a fintech maybe using a Facebook profile to make a decision about creditworthiness, I think we can all agree that that might get us into a little bit of trouble, right? But what I think we're really talking about is leveraging alternative data and leveraging consumer permission data to really enhance credit decisioning. You know, so from a FICO perspective, our FICO scores business, we've innovated on scores that use, you know, not just the credit bureau data, but they also use and leverage customer permission data or open banking data to enhance the risk decisioning perspective. So, you know, we're fully supportive of leveraging as much data as possible in order to make the best decision possible for customers. But our aim is to ensure that data that's being used is producing fair, unbiased, and ethical results. And so we need to make sure that we're not just using, you know, one piece of data to determine a credit risk profile.
Let's switch gears a little bit. I understand that you are very passionate about your Women in Leadership program. Tell me more about that.
Yes. So our FICO Women Leaders program is a program we've had running for a number of years now. It's a program focused on teaching women to lead themselves first so that they can lead others. And we really focused on developing the skills that are needed to be an authentic leader and to really know yourself so that when you lead, you know the base of values that you're leading from and can lead in that authentic way. We've had a tremendous amount of success in the program. You know, we've had over 70% of the participants in the program have seen their responsibilities expanded since completing the program. We've also had over kind of, I think 30% of the women at this point have received a promotion after going through the program. But I think what I'm most proud of is the program has created a community and connected the women with, you know, inside of FICO, because women in tech is still a small group, and we've really been able to create a large global community of women that are supporting each other, encouraging each other, and mentoring each other so that they can succeed together.
Why do you think there continues to be a lack of gender diversity in tech?
You know, that's a really great question, because when we look at it, women are entering the workforce at a higher rate than men today. Where I'm located here in the U.S., you know, women, you know, still they comprise 50% of the workforce, but only 26% in the tech industry. So I think from why lack of diversity still exists, I would say first it starts there being a lack of diversity in leadership roles. And I think so that means that there's a lack of role models for women. And I think the makeup of and diversity of a leadership team, it really matters, because it signals to individuals that are looking to join an organization or even looking to reach for higher positions in an organization, whether they can reach those leadership ranks and whether they can succeed. And so first, I think, you know, the diversity problem in leadership itself is kind of discouraging some people. And I think, you know, second, I think from a technology perspective in general, as a woman that works in the tech industry, is that we are not encouraging women enough to enter into the areas of STEM. And then those women that do enter into the areas of STEM, half of them still aren't joining the tech industry. A lot of them are going into research or other areas. And so I think we have a lot more work to do up front to make sure that we are encouraging women to come into the space, into the industry, and that we're making sure when they do that they're set up for success.
So what once women enter the tech industry, but then they kind of stall there, I think. So what can be done to have more women in top leadership in tech, just like yourself?
Yeah, I think, you know, if I could just narrow it down to a couple of things that I think are really meaningful things that we can all do to address this. You know, I would say, you know, first, we need to have more mentorship roles and more mentorship for women. You know, most of the women in the workforce, if you were to survey them, would say they've never had a mentor or a role model in their career that was helping them to succeed. And you know, men are mentored at a higher rate than women. I think this puts women at a huge disadvantage. And so when an opportunity has arisen, sometimes women aren't prepared or haven't been given the skills necessary to have the skill set for that job. So I think if we can improve mentorship in organizations, that would be number one for me. Number two is I think we still need to think about the environment that women are working in. I think, you know, women, you know, still face challenges, from an environment perspective. Women are still suffering from microaggressions. We're still suffering from harassment in some workplaces. And there's a lot of gender bias, I think, still out there. And so, you know, and even men are often seen more competent and more capable than women in leadership, and women are often overlooked because of these biases. So I think if we want more women to succeed, we really need to create an environment that's, you know, psychologically safe for them, and it's supportive and it's unbiased, where everyone can thrive and survive, and that everyone has an equal opportunity to succeed. And the last thing I think, and this is really important, and it's why I started the FICO Women Leaders program, was that we really need to do a better job of teaching women about leadership skills and about self-awareness. I think that, you know, women and men, we tend to tend at times to have different leadership styles and qualities. And, you know, this happened to me as a young woman. You know, I think, you know, far too many women are really pushed to adopt what would be considered maybe a more masculine style of leadership, and told that they need to be a certain way in order to reach higher levels in an organization. And they're really not taught to embrace their strengths. And I think, you know, women leaders are often more empathetic. They often make decisions from a sense of community and not a sense of self. And I think it's that diversity of thought and that diversity of approach that makes organizations stronger. So if we can teach women to be themselves and be the best version of themselves, and to operate from a place of values, that we will be able to create the self-confidence in women to want to reach for those positions and to want to lead others.
Excellent answer. And I'm so thrilled to find out that your program is very successful, with a third of participants getting promoted and 70%, I think you said, seeing expanded responsibilities. But let's switch back to FICO itself. Looking ahead, what's next for the company when it comes to AI-powered transformations?
Sure. So from a software perspective, we're going to continue to build and deliver the capabilities for our FICO platform. And we're going to continue to enhance the existing capabilities that we have. And we're just going to continue to work with our customers to transform the way that they're making decisions and the way that they're delivering personalized experiences for their customers. And we're going to, you know, continue to work with our customers to drive the remarkable results that they're all achieving. And so our focus is on continuing to deliver the most differentiated, best AI platform out in the market.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Stephanie. We'll leave it there. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Deborah.
To get more AI news and insights, visit our website at aibusiness.com. Until next time, thank you for listening.